Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on the road. Just made it with a minute to go to our broadcast today. Working my way south to our special retreat coming up. Today, no guest. We're going to have an entire hour where you'll have a chance to call in and address issues that you find important, to share insights and questions. Everybody has an opinion about something. We'd like to hear yours. If we can all benefit from it, if it empowers us. First on health and nutrition, then I'm going to be talking about, let's stop hiding behind recycling and be honest about consumption. George Monbiot on that. Also, we're going to talk about the desertification. It's a crisis. I mentioned it recently about a discussion on China, how China has more desert overcoming its cities than any place else in the world, and yet they're doing almost nothing about it. Well, we also are having that problem out west. I'll talk about that. And we got a lot of comments recently about a piece Naomi Wolf wrote where she was very critical of the whistleblower, Snowden. And some people didn't understand it. So I'd like to open it up and share what she wrote and then get your feedback. As you see, we have a lot to discuss. Let's begin. First up on health and nutrition, onions. Onions harnessing powerful anti-inflammatory properties. In fact, I've known for a long time about onions helping to thin the blood, like aspirin, and that also helps protect against a stroke. There was a aunt I had, in fact, she was the longest living of any of the individuals in my family, and she insisted upon having an onion a day, and she said an onion a day keeps a heart attack away. Well, it'll keep a stroke away, absolutely. She didn't have any of the science, but she had common sense. Now we have the science. Here's the latest on onions and why you should have them every day, especially the sweet ones, because they have quercetin, quercetin, C-E-T-I-N, and they have antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidin, C-Y-A-N-I-N. Now, quercetin and anthocyanidin are very powerful anti-inflammatories. They turn off inflammation. If the inflammation is Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, it helps turn it off. Earlier in the week, you heard a mother and daughter, and you heard the mother and daughter talking about how much progress has been made in the mother's stage 5 Alzheimer's, and that for their perspective, it's nothing less than miraculous. The father, who's 81, said that he has his wife back, and he was terrified that he had lost her to Alzheimer's. And if anyone's ever had anyone in their life who has Alzheimer's, you'll know what that means, where they forget things, then they forget who you are, and they look at you quizzically, do I know you? And it's your wife, or it's your son, or it's your daughter, or your husband. And then you get this empty feeling in the pit of your stomach. It makes you nauseous, and you think they're gone. Well, the answer is no, they're not gone. We can bring them back. Now, there's a whole protocol for this, but onions, I want to tell you, and garlic are at the top end of that list. They also contain sulfur. I give so much garlic to the people who are on these protocols that they've never consumed that amount of garlic in a year. They get it every day. Quote, this is from a major study. The results highlight the importance of the consumption of natural vegetables and also contribute to the understanding of the beneficial effects of functional foods. Remember, a functional food is any food that actually does something good for you. So when you eat an apple, the apple skin and the pectin within the apple help your intestine, help digestion, help your vision, help your skin, help your heart, help your arteries. It's a functional food. An onion thins the blood, prevents a heart attack, prevents a stroke. It also can kill viruses and bacteria in the throat and in the intestine. It's a functional food. Blueberries do the same thing. They're very powerful. So we need to have onions every day. The more onions you eat, the healthier you're going to be. In fact, quercetin, which is in the onion, according to Arthritis Today, inhibits or stops leukotrienes and histamines and prostaglandins, which are inflammatory causers in both rheumatoid and osteoarthritis. It also helps people have allergies. If you know someone who has runny nose, sore throat, red eyes, then if they're eating onions, that helps turn off the leukotrienes and histamines that cause the runny eyes. And that's all good. Now, there is here's the study. It says, quote, functional foods can help prevent metabolic syndrome. Well, metabolic syndrome is when you're eating the wrong foods and you're overweight, when you end up with a belly hanging over your belt. That's not good. So you want to get the benefits of functional foods every day in your life. Next up, barley. Barley is a grain most people have not consumed. They should. Most people's grain of choice is wheat, and that's not good. Why? Several reasons not to have wheat. First, at the top of the list, wheat has got gluten, and gluten is like cement in the intestine. It is one of the most common allergens that you could possibly consume. When I tell the people I counsel to get off wheat, let me give you an example, a real specific example. 16-year-old guy, very bright, but he's been diagnosed with ADHD and put on a typical drug like Ritalin to calm him down. So what happens is everyone adapts to him having ADHD. So I said, how long have you had the ADHD? Oh, you know, I've been having it for about 5 years. Do you have it all the time? Well, I generally don't have it on the weekends. I see. So suddenly a red flag goes up. I said, you realize you can't have a disease that's episodic. You can't Monday to Friday you have ADHD and then Saturday and Sunday you don't have it. So clearly there's something in your lifestyle that's caused it. So let's go through what you do differently on the weekend. Well, on the weekend, I stay with my dad. My dad's into healthy eating, and he doesn't have any pasta or except rice pasta and none of the bread except Ezeko bread. And during the week, you know, my mom, she doesn't believe in any of this stuff. And at school, I just eat what everyone else eats, and after school I have pizza, et cetera. I said, let's do a test to see whether or not you're allergic to gluten in the wheat. And sure enough, he registered very high. So I said, what else do you do? Well, you know, during the week, I, you know, have milkshakes and cheese and grilled cheese sandwiches. But on the weekend, I don't. My dad doesn't allow dairy. Mom thinks he's a nut, health nut. So he tested very high for dairy. I find that dairy and wheat are the two most common allergens. When I got him off that and started having him daily have wheat substitutes and dairy substitutes. So I told him to make a grilled cheese sandwich, but you make it out of Ezeko bread with a rice cheese. You can't tell the difference, a cheddar, sharp cheddar, a Monterey Jack. They all taste equal to a regular cow's milk. But you're not going to have allergies. And I said, do you notice during the week whether you have nasal discharge, mucus? He's, yeah. I said, so you blow your nose a lot? And he's, yeah. I said, well, that's from the dairy. If you look in the mirror in the morning, and if your eyes are puffy, if you have mucus in the corner of your eyes, if you're blowing your nose a lot, if you're hawking, phlegm up, that's generally an allergy. So within 3 weeks, he became normal in his biochemistry. And his attitude shifted. He was no longer restless, fatigued, and as a result, he no longer had the diagnosis of ADD or ADHD. Now, I told him to go off wheat and start looking at barley. A good study shows from Lund University the effects of eating barley, like a mushroom barley soup or a barley cereal in the morning with blueberries and walnuts, some maple syrup. It can change the appetite-regulating hormones observed after only two meals. Now, 19 young adults were recruited to participate in this randomized crossover study. And they started eating dairy, or excuse me, barley, and they noticed that there was a increase in the good biochemistry and a decrease in the bad biochemistry, especially in the gut. So what we find is that when you eat barley, you have a healthier intestine, you have a healthier gut. In fact, there was a breakthrough paper published in Nature magazine that reported on the microbial population in the gut are different between obese and lean people and between those who are vegetarian and those who are heavy meat eaters. And the more meat you eat, the more putrefaction you have and the more toxic bacteria, the microflora you have. And then that means you're more likely to be obese. So lean people tend to have healthier bacteria in the gut, and that's good. Barley helps you get there. Also, ice therapy, spot treatment, cancer of the lung. And this is from the Society for Interventional Radiology, and it's called cryoablation. And it's a radiologist presented research of a new minimally invasive treatment option for advanced cancers that had spread to lung tissue. And frozen, literally frozen balls of ice can safely kill cancer tumors that have spread to the lungs, according to the first prospective multicenter trial of cryoablation. The results are being presented at the Society of International Radiology annual meeting. So it's a quote, cryoablation has potential as a treatment for cancer that is spread to the lungs from other parts of the body and could prolong the lives of patients who are running out of options. That's according to Dr. Woodrum, MD, PhD, and author of the study done at the Mayo Clinic. And so that's good news. And also, coca, chocolate. They looked again, and this is in Science Daily in the Journal of Cellular Biochemistry. And here's what they found. Now, we're talking about ideally organic, sugar-free, it can be sweet but not with sugar, and dairy-free chocolate. I'll quote this from Science Daily. Epidemiological studies have indicated that dietary habits and antioxidants from diet can influence the incidence of neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. In recent years, a number of papers have reported on neuroprotective effects of polyphenols in cell and animal models. However, the majority of these studies have focused only on the antioxidant properties of these compounds and less on the mechanisms of actions at cellular molecular levels. Now, a new study from the Center for Biotechnology at Temple University and the University of Alleghia in Italy show that coca polyphenols triggers neuroprotection by activating a BDNF survival pathway in both the AB plaque treated cells and AB treated cells, resulted in the counter-reaction of neurite dystherapy. In lay language, that means it's helping the neurons in the brain. So if you know someone who has Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or dementia or memory loss, we're suggesting that the coca polyphenols, 2 to 4 ounces a day, that would be good. Also, a new study on L-carnitine. I'm a big believer in it. I've looked at dozens of studies on it, including large studies. This is what this one has to say. L-carnitine, quote, significantly improves cardiac health in patients after a heart attack. This is a multi-center team of investigators in a study published today in Mayo Clinic Proceedings. Their findings, based upon an analysis of key control trials associated L-carnitine with significant reduction in death from all causes and a highly significant reduction in ventricular arrhythmias and angina attacks following a heart attack compared to a placebo or control group. Now, why is this important? Simply because heart disease is a leading cause of death in the United States. And although many of the therapies developed in recent decades have improved life expectancy, adverse cardiovascular events, such as ventricular arrhythmias, and angina attacks still occur frequently after an acute myocardial infarction or heart attack. And it's known that during ischemic events, L-carnitine levels are depleted. So investigators sought to determine the effects of targeting cardiac metabolic pathways using L-carnitine to improve free fatty acid levels and glucose oxidation. And it worked. It was terrific. So 27% reduction in all causes of death, 65% reduction in arrhythmias, 40% reduction in angina, reduction in infarct size. So L-carnitine, I'm going to suggest 1,000 milligrams to 2,000 milligrams a day in divided doses. Now, what happens when you have high blood pressure in your body? Well, you're more likely to have an aneurysm. Due to the constant high pressure, the arteries of your walls can be weakened. And over time, when the constant pressure of the blood moving through the weak arteries can cause a section of the artery wall to bulge. It's also known as an aneurysm. Now, an aneurysm can be life-threatening, as it can potentially rupture and cause internal bleeding. That can come from high blood pressure. But also arterial damage comes from high blood pressure. Quite simply, your blood pressure can damage the cells of your arteries, especially the inner linings. And the pressure exerted on the walls makes the artery walls thick and stiff. And this constant action on the walls of the arteries can lead to a disease called arterial sclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. And the damage can further block the blood flow to your heart and kidneys and brain and arms and legs, which can lead to many complications. Probably the most common association with high blood pressure is stroke. You really increase your risk of a stroke when you have high blood pressure. And high blood pressure can cause a break in a weakened blood vessel, which then bleeds in the brain. It also can cause bad eyesight. High blood pressure can cause blood vessels in the eye to burst or bleed. And this can give you blurry vision. It can ultimately lead to total or partial blindness. It can also lead to heart failure. The strain of your heart caused by high blood pressure can cause your heart muscle to weaken and work less efficiently. Eventually, this will lead your muscular heart to fail. It can lead to dementia. Vascular dementia can result from narrowing and blockages of the arteries that supply blood to the brain, and can also result from strokes caused by an interruption of blood flow to the brain. And also, sexual dysfunction. I can't tell you how many men I've counseled who've had erectile dysfunction, and they can't figure out why. They have desire, but they can't get an erection, no matter what. And then you have to start looking. And then you see, lo and behold, they have high blood pressure. High blood pressure can lead to the inability to maintain and have an erection. And it's very common in men over 40. What it does, it damages the linings of your blood vessels and causes your arteries to harden and narrow. And this limits blood flow. And this means less blood is able to go into the penis. And high blood pressure can reduce blood flow to your vagina, which can further lead to a decrease in sexual desire arousal and vaginal dryness, which is epidemic, and no one ever talks about it. Or even difficulty achieving orgasm can both be associated to high blood pressure. Also, you can have bone loss. That's something else I just thought about, and where you can increase the amount of calcium in your urine, and this leads to excessive elimination of calcium through urination, and that can lead to bone loss, leading to osteoporosis. And finally today, eating watermelon, especially this time of year, cold watermelon, how good is that? I like to put lemon juice on. Try this. Next time you eat your watermelon, pour some lemon juice on it. Two or three lemons, cut them, roll them, then squeeze them. And food scientists at Florida State University found the consumption of 6 grams, that's not a lot, of L-citrulline from watermelon extract for 6 weeks, normalized the blood pressure of all 9 adults in a study who previously had elevated blood pressure. That's terrific. I mean, how good is that to lower your blood pressure by eating watermelon? Now, watermelon is the richest edible source of the amino acid L-citrulline, C-I-T-ruline, R-U-L-L-I-N-E, and that regulates healthy blood pressure. So it's converted to another amino acid, L-arginine, once in the body, and that can help you increase blood flow to your reproductive system, and that can help men and women. So the more watermelon you eat, the better it is for your sex life. The lower your blood pressure, it's all good. And that was published in the American Journal of Hypertension. I'm Gary Nall, always sharing information every day to empower people, live longer, healthier. We're going to take a short break and come back, and we're going to open our lines. Now, I'm in a location that I cannot, I don't have a computer, so I can't see who's online, but my engineer can tell me your name, and you'll be able to get on by calling 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Pass the biscuits, please. There's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live through our studios. I'm not in New York, but the Progressive Radio Network is there every day. And by the way, to help our sister station WBAI through its time of crisis, and it sure is in a crisis now, and things will be changing, and we hope that they're going to change for the best, because we all want that wonderful, powerful voice of a station to help those people who've been associated and appreciative and supportive of the station for over 55 years. So we're going to be building another studio. It's almost done, so that as a backup, if they need it, at least they'll have their own independent, standalone, 24/7 ISDN Comrex studio. So this way, one more way to help the station if it's needed. So I'll let you know how things are going when I get back to New York with the station. I haven't had a chance to meet with anyone. Let's see who's on the line. I'm going to ask my engineer if anyone's on the line. Let me tell you, before we go to your calls, this is from our environmental segment today, genetically modified cabbage. Genetically modified cabbage with scorpion poison coming soon. This is from Heidi Stevenson from Gaia Health. Quote, agribusiness is in a mad rush to take over the earth and seems willing to stop at nothing. Coming soon is cabbage with scorpion poison engineered in every cell. Of course, they claim it's safe and will result in less pesticide use, but history and logic says otherwise. Who will wake up from the insane mating between agribusiness and GMOs? So it's on its way, pesticide made with scorpion poison, genetically engineered into a virus, and so we're going to be getting it. And also, I wanted to also mention that the United States ranks at the bottom of child well-being. This is from Casey Danson from globalpossibilities.org. Quote, the United States ranked in the bottom four of a United Nations report on child well-being. That's out of 29 countries. America landed second from the bottom in child poverty and held a similar dismal position when it came to child life satisfaction. Keeping the U.S. company at the bottom of the report, which gauged material well-being, overall health, access to housing and education, was Lithuania, Latvia, and Romania, three of the poorest countries in the survey. And we're right there with Lithuania, Latvia, and Romania. Why doesn't someone remind Bill O'Reilly when he gets, you know, up in his stratosphere of self-indulgence and self-importance, talking about our exceptionalism? Ask him when was the last time he went out where I am on the road interviewing thousands of people who are the new poor. And you look at some of their conditions. You look at the fact they don't have food and they can't fix up their places. And we're living in some people in America, about 100 million, are living as if they were third world, certainly second world. But who isn't? Where are the children best kept? The Netherlands ranked number one on the list. Norway and Iceland, Finland and Sweden fill at the top five. So why don't we talk about that? Why isn't that up on anyone's agenda and report? I think it should be. Also, I want to deal on an environmental issue today before I take your calls with desertification. It's a crisis affecting 168 countries at an annual cost of almost $500 billion. This is from Ed King, reporting to climatechange.org. He says, severe land degradation is now affecting 168 countries across the world, according to the newest released report from the UN Desertification Convention. And it's five, quote, land degradation and drought are impeding the development of all nations in the world. This is a challenge that is causing governments to take this issue seriously. But how do you get them to do it? By showing them the rate of return on restoring degraded land is one of the smartest investments of our time. Desertification is land degradation, and drought is an issue of market failure. The lack of economic market valuation has led to land being perceived as a cheap resource. Well, it's not, and we're running out of it everywhere. And why? Because of deforestation. That's a major contributor to the greenhouse gases, and it causes deserts. And this has a knock-on effect in terms of reducing the planet's store of natural carbon sinks and destroying the eco-services that trees provide, such as water storage, and it also exacerbates that problem. In China, over 400 million of its citizens are affected by soil erosion, causing annual economic losses into the billions of dollars. And they're now finally starting to take a look at it and ask, how do we get here? How do we get out of here? And also, this is something I thought was interesting. I will ask for your feedback on this. This is from Counterpunch, from David Lindorf. And he said, just wondering, is Naomi Wolf working for the National Security Agency? I hate to do this, but I feel obligated to share, as the story unfolds, my creeping concern that the writer Naomi Wolf is not whom she purports to be, and that her motive in writing an article on her public Facebook page speculating about whether National Security Agency leaker Edward Snowden might actually be still working for the National Security Agency could be to support the government's efforts to destroy him. After all, with Snowden under vicious attack by both the government and the corporate media, being wrongly accused of treason, or portrayed as a dropout slacker, a narcissist, a loser hoping to gain fame, and even a cross-dressing weirdo, What defender of liberty would pile on with publication of a work of absolutely fact-free speculation as to whether he might also be kind of a double agent put out there by the National Security Agency in order to discourage real potential whistleblowers from even considering leaking information about government spying on Americans? Because that's exactly what Wolf has done on her website. And what basis does she offer for her wild-eyed speculation that Snowden is perhaps, quote, not who he purports to be, end quote? Well, first of all, she notes darkly that the U.S. spy agencies, quote, create false identities, build fake companies, influence real media with fake stories, create distractions or demonization in the local news that advance U.S. policies, bug and harass opposition, disrupt and infiltrate the meetings and communications of factions that the U.S. does not wish to see in power, end quote. This, she says, touting her own now rather dated 2007 book, The End of America, is, quote, something you cannot see if you spend time around people who are senior in both the political establishment, the intelligence, and State Department establishments. You can't avoid seeing it if you interview principal defectors from those systems, as I've done, end quote. Then, after having assured us how well-connected she is, she raises what she calls red flags about Snowden. Quote, I was concerned about the way Snowden conveys his message. He's not struggling for words or thinking hard. Has even bright, articulate whistleblowers under stress will do. Rather, he appears to be transmitting whole paragraphs smoothly without stumbling. To me, this reads as someone who has learned his talking points. Again, the way that political campaigns train surrogates to transmit talking points. He keeps saying things like, if you're a journalist and you think you are the transmission point of this info, they're going to kill you, end quote. I fully expect to be prosecuted under the Espionage Act. He also stressed that he will lose his $200,000 a year salary, his girlfriend, his house in Hawaii. These are the kind of messages that the police state would like journalists to take away, end quote. In case we miss the point, she adds, implying rather strongly that she is concluding Snowden is a fake. A real whistleblower, quote, also does not put out potential legal penalties as options and almost always by this point has a lawyer by his side or her side who would prohibit him or her from coming, come get me under the Espionage Act. Finally, to my experience, real whistleblowers are completely focused on their act of public service and trying to manage the jeopardy to themselves and their loved ones. They don't tend ever to call attention to their own self-sacrifice, end quote. She says she talks about the pole dancing girlfriend he abandoned. Actually, he did that for her safety, implying his reputation, his process might be so that the media have a justification to keep showing her sexy photos. The media keeps saying he is in a safe house in Hong Kong, which, according to Wolf, cannot exist in the former British colony, now part of China, quote, unless you are one organization that can still get off the surveillance grid because that org created it, end quote. He's not surrounded by an army of attorneys the way WikiLeaks' Julian Assange was when he traveled. But he is already moved. All sheer wild speculation about Snowden, with not even one shred of actual evidence against him to suggest he's anything but what he says he is, a young man who was hired to do some real dirty work spying on Americans en masse, who decided that what was happening was the creation of a totalitarian system and who had the courage of, instead of walking away from it, putting his life in jeopardy by publicly blowing the whistle. I have nothing against trying to uncover conspiracies, particularly those orchestrated by a government like our own, which we know has manufactured from whole cloth fake evidence to justify a war in Iraq that killed hundreds of thousands of innocent people, even to the point of torturing captives to get them to make up tales that would justify that fake evidence. But when someone like Wolf's reputation on the left sinks to this level of baseless and libelous accusations against a brave man who is under attack by that government, it cannot be allowed to pass. Of course, I don't really think that Wolf is acting as an agent for the government. And then he goes on to share his points of view, why he believes she's off base. But this was by a lot of different people believed that Snowden wasn't real. And here's the issue. If you have any proof that Snowden is an agent provocateur, a double agent, faking anything, lying, present your evidence. Otherwise, from what I have seen, he is a legitimate whistleblower. And he has given Glenn Greenwald, who is a terrific constitutional lawyer and investigative journalist, a lot of material. He has absolutely nothing to gain from this and an awful lot to lose. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Let's go to Pennsylvania, where we have someone standing by. What's your name?
It's Roger.
Hi, Roger.
Thank you for taking my call. A great show again. My question concerns beta-carotene, whether it's okay to take it if it's from natural sources. I do know that the synthetic sources are bad, made from acetylene gas. So the question is, should I take beta-carotene naturally, and how much, please?
Beta-carotene is terrific to take. It does all good, no bad. All right.
Thank you very much, Gary. I appreciate that.
All the best to you. John, your turn. You're up. Where are you calling from, John?
Hi, Gary. This is John from Long Island again. I feel like a regular here. Hopefully your audience enjoys my topics as much as I find them with your responses. Real quick, again, looking at my computer, Southwest, they have extreme heat. They're supposed to hit 120. It's these temperatures, as you've been pointing out, it's just more to come. That was my first point. The second point is, a couple days ago you discussed life energy in your scale in food. And I was just wondering if you studied the difference between organic food and GMO food with this study. I thought that would be really interesting.
And there, yes, I did. I let's say you have an apple. I did apple raw and apple organic and apple not organic. And then apple that was dried naturally. Apple juice. Also apple sauce. And making something from the apple. So every step in the processing lowered the vital life energy. And the highest concentration of energy was in the apple juice. And the organic was a higher measure by 2. So it does make a difference. And I did the same thing with broccoli. Broccoli raw, broccoli steamed, broccoli frozen, and broccoli jarred. I did canned beans and fresh beans, and everything you can make from them. And what I found was that the healing foods were on a scale 5 and up. And foods that were, let's say, 0 to 5 are the most common in the American diet. Occasionally, someone will have a food or beverage that has a very high level of energy, but otherwise they don't. And then you can directly chart a person's health and diseases by the energy that they're taking in. Now, that's on food, but I also did it with humans. It's a study I never talk about. What I found with people is the quality of the energy they manifest and how that impacts other people, because literally people can take your energy away from you. You've heard the term prana sucker?
Yes.
Prana is your life energy, where you're around people and you just feel drained, and other people you're around, you feel energized. It's the same phenomena. People who are coming from their authentic self, which is spiritual, and people are coming from their conditioned self that they try to fake as if they're together, and they're not, and they have some other agenda, and boy, that really changes a person's level of energy.
Now,
environments also are impacted by energy, and that's why we like certain environments and other than other environments, and we don't get enough of the natural environments. Okay.
Yeah, just a quick question on that. With your, say, when you treat a patient and you're giving your energy and that patient is receiving your energy, how much percentage-wise is that? Does that patient, is it 50-50 that that patient has to be on board to receive it? I know you just talked about the energy going back and forth. I was just curious, as you, the giver, you're given 100% of your energy. Obviously, that patient has to be receptive to take that energy. And I was just wondering that percentage, if somebody is negative and just going to resist it, that becomes, I guess, a person that's not going to get healthier than compared to a person that is very receptive.
They're not going to be healthy from me. Maybe
Got
someone
it.
Else. I can't speak for anyone else or what anyone else does, but a person has to exceed the level of their imbalance with the energies that they're bringing in order to change the foundation of their cells, the DNA message. You can't just sit passively and listen to something, watch something, read something, and then expect change. It won't happen. And that's what we've done. We've mastered the art of passive receptivity. We that's Oprah's massive audience of zombies, or Dr. Phil, or they're all the same. All they're looking for is someone to give them a reason to feel alive today. But on their own, they're not going to do anything. And so they live for that moment when there's someone new and something exciting, a book to buy, and that's how they live. But those are passive people. You have to be proactive where you self-generate every day. You have to own the energy of your experience in order for you to master that. And it's only through the mastery of energy that you heal. That is my experience. Others can have a different experience.
Yeah, you have a great saying, master the art of who you are and sacrifice who you no longer want to be. And I think that's great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your call. And do we have a Janice there?
Yes, I have two questions. One, where can I get non-GMO corn on the cob?
Farmers markets, health food stores. There's a lot of certified organic farms in the area that grow organic corn.
Okay.
And now through September, you'll be able to get it. All right.
Okay. And what about titanium implants? What do you think of implants?
In some cases, there's no way to get around it. But if there is, I would choose not to have any metal in the mouth at all.
I see.
And you have to have an environmental dentist who can test you and test your meridians with whatever you're using to see if your body's reacting.
I see. Very well.
That would be a holistic dentist.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All the best.
Bye.
Luann Panessi. Luann, your turn.
Hello, Gary. Well, I just want to let you know we got a flood of calls yesterday for the work study segment of the retreat coming up. If people still want to call, I am still interviewing people. They can contact me at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I'm interviewing people all day. This is it. We're wrapping it up by the end of the day today. I did get an email here from one of your listeners who was outraged about this article that he sent me. He said the poor oversight by the IRS allowed workers to use agency credit cards to buy things like wine, pornography, and novelty decorations, a popcorn machine. Now that they're uncovering all this stuff, they're actually seeing how corrupt the IRS is. And your people in the audience are outraged. When I bring things up, it's usually I have at least 7 or 8 people from the audience that email me and are clamoring about this. And, of course, they're trying to backpedal and cover their tracks. And saying, oh, well, that took place 2 years ago. Well, that took place 3 years ago. But it doesn't make a difference. The problem is that our taxpayer money is paying for things like this, and there's no one overseeing the IRS. And, of course, they want to know what can they do and what are your thoughts on this?
I would pull back from the narrow question. I don't think it's relevant. I believe we have to look at the larger issue. To find that the IRS had a meeting and spent $2.2 million, and none of that benefited the American consumer is really insignificant. And here's why. Our entire federal government is corrupt. At every level, it is corrupt. If you're looking at the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, you're looking at $20 billion a year. And if you're looking at the Defense Department, it's $1.4 trillion a year. Every single agency of government has massive waste built in. And that's because of the relationship between the public and private sector, where people who are former lobbyists or legislators join firms that go back into Congress or some part of government and get sweetheart deals where their company is able to mark off the salaries, which are huge, of all their executives, their legal bills, their lobbying fees, and that's before they are then going to make a profit. So when you hear of companies getting a contract, cost plus, in the cost are all the cost of these massive salaries. So just imagine if Lou Ampanessi had a business running a health center and you were subsidized by the government. And so you said that every patient you see, you're going to charge $20,000 per hour. But your is cost plus. So the cost is you deciding that you want to charge $20,000, and then but you'll make a profit on the top of that. That's what all these companies do. That's why you never hear about any of the companies being held accountable. And this is the whole issue. Both the Democrats and the Republicans, the corporate Democrats and Republicans, are incapable of raising this issue because they benefit from it. I remember when Bill Clinton was governor and running of Arkansas and was running for president, and a friend of mine and their husband had a private fundraising party, and I was invited to it. Everyone there were the wealthiest, most powerful Democrats in New York. They all know one another. And they wanted Bill Clinton to be a president because they realized how they would have it made for life. Because then the door is open once you fundraise to become an ambassador. I mean, we have people who have no background in domestic foreign service, who have no background in how to resolve issues, who give lots of money and then are made ambassadors. That's the gift given back. It shouldn't be that way. If you want to help someone, give a career, a professional who has spent decades working in a country, let them be ambassador. But then the contracts, your name comes up at the top of everyone's list. Your idea is the one that they will look at. Why? Because, well, you gave a lot of money, and that's who they listen to, and that's who they care about. So that's how that works. Now look at every agency of government, the nuclear people who manufacture, let's say, nuclear power plants. They're the ones who have the most control over a Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They control it. The pharmaceutical industry controls the outcome of issues the FDA and the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service and the National Cancer Institute and the National Institutes of Mental Health. So behind every single governmental agency are individuals who have massive profits. We pay for it, and we don't get anything for it. When did we win the war on cancer? But we've spent over $1 trillion on it. That trillion went into people's pockets. And every year it's the same people getting massive amounts of money. No one ever questions why we're giving money to people who fail. People who have succeeded with cancer, we don't give a nickel to. In fact, if you succeed with a non-pharmaceutical approach of helping with any condition, you're excluded, you're attacked. So there's a much bigger picture here. And it's a picture that people on the left who are corporatized and the right who are idealized, these individuals refuse to see that the government we have at the federal, state, and local level is simply in control of our lives. And that's dangerous. And they should be brought down to size. All of the executive branch should have most of its power removed, and we should have consumer oversight of all governmental agencies. That's what I believe. And so therefore, put into context, the IRS, which shouldn't even exist, we should have one flat corporate tax that would give us all the money without any tax dodgers, without offshore tax havens, without making $5 billion profit and yet getting a rebate from the American government, which is the meaning the average citizens, well, we can't get that break. So there should be no IRS, one tax fits all, no deductions at the federal level. And then you run your government based upon your income. And none of these ever-expanding bureaucracies, because bureaucracies are meant to expand. They're meant to get bigger. Now, if you saw a human being that went from 130 pounds to 700 pounds to 1,700 pounds, you'd say you're morbidly obese, you're risking your health. But when a governmental agency becomes like that, we simply shrug as if it's, well, you know, what difference does it make? It makes a tremendous difference. And we're working for the bureaucrats. We're not working for better America, for the improvement and enhancement of our own quality of lives. So we're the foolish ones. They're the smart ones. All right?
Yeah. Well, it's almost like that. The article. I just read a full article yesterday about how Whole Foods was coerced by the FDA to accept non-GMO food, that they pressured them. That's what Whole Foods rep said. They pressured them and threatened them if they didn't take on GMO products into their stores. So they caved and they said, look, if you want us to continue, touting you as the best food, healthy food store out there, you're going to have our products. So they caved, and this is what happens. And then if we do decrease these bloated corporations, then they'll cry, well, we're destroying American jobs, and they almost
just the opposite. Here's the argument. Corporations are extremely profitable because they're backstopped with subsidies, and yet they want more profit to go to the executives and to the upper management and to their shareholders. If they simply reasoned that if they gave 20% of their operating net profit to their workers and increase the quality of their lives, where someone might have been making, let's say, $40 an hour when you share that profit with them at the end of the year, that person then has money to spend in their economy. That person can go out to dinner or can go on trips or can buy something that they feel is important to them. Now, that creates a healthy economy. The more dollars that you're giving people, the more dollars that can be spent within a society. But when you want all the profit for yourself, then you're willing to close down factories, 58,000 factories closed, and offshore that to where you make more profit at the end of the day for making that dishwasher, that automobile, or that shirt. And so these people are looking only at profit, short-term profit. They're not looking at long-term consequences to making people suffer, where both people in a family have to work and frequently then can't even meet minimal standards. That's the danger that we all face, is that companies no longer care about their communities, no longer care about society, no longer care about America. They're extremely unpatriotic. The most unpatriotic people I know are those who wave the flag the most and yell and scream that they're patriots. These people are corporate apologists. They'll tell you to cut welfare. They'll never tell you to cut the welfare for the Defense Department, which is about 80% welfare. Now, they can't be that stupid. Well, they could be, but they're not. So they're disingenuous. But the audience that listens to them or watches them, they're not thinking. They want to have someone else do the thinking for them and force feed them so they can just stay committed to waving the flag and saying, we're patriots, let's get rid of Medicare and let's get rid of Social Security. And I'm saying, until you need Medicare, until you need your Social Security, and the Social Security, the government's not giving you Social Security. You've given the government with your employer Social Security for your whole working life. They're merely giving it back to you over the remainder of your life. It's not an entitlement. Anyone who tells you Social Security is entitlement is a blathering idiot. But that's Fox. Everyone there is a blathering idiot. And it's unfortunate that we haven't addressed this issue honestly. It's not an entitlement. We pay it. The government doesn't pay it for us. It collects it. and then it misuses it on other things and put IOUs in the fund, and it's bankrupted the fund. It's used all the money. So now we're expecting fewer people who are still working to support those people coming behind. And then we say, oh, but it's going to run a deficit. Yeah, and exactly why will it run a deficit? Because you use the money you shouldn't have used. You see, government does everything in the wrong way. And we haven't held them accountable. We're out of time. Thanks for your comment, Luann. And by the way, Luann, today's our last mention. Anyone who wants to speak with you about the retreat, give me your number, please.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Last day today.
Thank you. Now, let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we really are taking a look at the U.S. Supreme Court decisions on marriage equality and Proposition 8, as well as Affirmative Action and Voting Rights Act.
Well, we look forward to this. It should be very exciting. By the way, Utrice, I just saw your ratings. Your ratings have jumped up substantially. And
is that right?
I sent your ratings over to WBAI.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Couldn't help it. Couldn't help it.
That's a wonderful thing to do.
But do you realize you have more people listening to you each day on PRN and downloading your show than their most popular woman morning broadcaster?
Wow, that's good to know. That's excellent to know.
That's karma, isn't it?
It's also a good thing about PRN as an alternative, and that's really what I'm interested in doing, building PRN.fm as a viable and just a necessary point of reference in everybody's daily intake of news. They should stop by PRN.fm, and that's what I want to encourage people to do.
Good for you. We look forward to your show. Utrice Lead right now.
Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be.